dreaming. Soon as I step on the scene, I'm hearing hoochie screaming, fiending for money. And
Jamie and Locker with you here on a Wednesday afternoon as, yes, the World Series begins on Friday.
I'm excited.
Absolutely.
I cannot believe the Jays are in this. This is insane.
At the start of the season? Who saw this coming?
No one. And if you know somebody in your group that's, I predicted this, they're lying.
I can understand somebody from Saskatchewan at one point was at a sport book in Vegas in March and is like, yeah, I'm going to drop 20 on the Blue Jays.
I want to see that what happens. I want to see it.
I get it.
You're going to need to bring it by the radio station.
But you didn't do it out of confidence, I know that much. But here we are, the Blue Jays against the Dodgers Friday. But we're going to get a Dodger perspective here on the Wednesday edition of the Green Zone. Fabian Ardaya covers the Dodgers for The Athletic. And Fabian with the Dodgers and their dominance throughout the playoffs. How are you breaking this one down? How are you looking at this World Series between the Dodgers and the Jays that gets started later this week?
Yeah, I think on paper, obviously, this is two teams kind of in very different spots. This is a Blue Jays team that obviously has broken through to the World Series for the first time in 30-plus years. This is a Dodgers team that's looking to really kind of capitalize and kind of turn things into a potential dynasty. I know that's something that they've avoided kind of talking about over the course of the season, but now that it's kind of so close, like, it's kind of hard to ignore, but I think it's going to be a fun series, honestly. I'm really curious to see how this Blue Jays lineup matches up against this Dodgers rotation that's been on a historic pace to start this postseason, and I think that's the thing that kind of stands out the most to me.
So the players and the pundits are all going to say the right things. Is there a arrogance to this fan base in Los Angeles that might suggest that this is going to be a pretty easy trip for them to another World Series title?
I don't know if arrogance is the right word, but I think confidence for sure. I think
confidence is a better word.
Yeah. I think that's definitely a level of confidence. I mean, it's hard not to feel that way when they're 9-1 this postseason, and they were red hot to finish the regular season. Like, this is a team that everyone kind of knew how talented they were over the course of the regular season. They didn't really show it for a lot of it. That's why they wound up winning 93 games as opposed to challenging all-time wins records that people thought they would, but I think the fact that they finally are playing their best baseball right now, like, this is the version of that team that I think everyone was expecting to see, and I think that has fueled definitely some of the confidence in how they sort of view this series.
Fabian, was that the single greatest performance we've ever seen from a baseball player in an individual playoff game, Game 4 Shohei Ohtani, in the history of baseball?
I think it's hard to argue, honestly. Like, you sort of look at it, like, from the comps, and, like, even, like, Reggie Jackson, all right, he had 3 home runs. Shohei Ohtani did that while also pitching 6 scoreless innings and striking out 10, and he just was dominant through stretches of that game. And obviously, so much is made of, like, the power of some of those home runs and how far they went, but I look at some of that stretch of how he was pitching, and, like, that was the best his splitters looked all year. There were stretches where he was firmly in control of that game, and it's hard to really say that one player wins a game, but, like, he literally did that in Game 4. He willed that team to a win because, like, obviously the Dodgers still, like, managed to tack on, managed to hold on, but, like, I don't think they win that game without Shohei Ohtani having that kind of performance, and, like, that sort of speaks to what Shohei Ohtani always could be and has been, and I think that's the best single-game distillation of the Shohei Ohtani experience.
I'm not exactly sure how teams travel, so I don't know what the process is. But as a sort of normal citizen going across the border, you have to go through, like, a scanner. Is there a possibility that we're going to find out that Ohtani is a robot?
I'm not sure about that. I do know the Dodgers travel a little bit differently than most teams. They use 2 planes.
Avoid the scanners.
Innovative there, and maybe they managed to get past the scanners if that's what's needed.
It's unbelievable. This guy's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, we're talking about it ongoing. Is he the best baseball player ever? And to have him in this spotlight, Fabian, it's as much as I want the Blue Jays to win, I can't. When's he going to pitch? When are we going to see the pitcher batter experience of Game 3, Game 4? How will they roll out Shohei in this series, you think?
Yeah, Dave Roberts kind of stopped short of saying it would be exactly the same rotation, but he kind of hinted it would be, which means it would be Snell and Yamamoto the first two games, Tyler Glass now in game three, Shohei Ohtani in game four. And that makes the most sense, just so that way you can have Snell, Glass now, and Yamamoto all sort of pitch on the regular rest the second time in that series. And then you have Ohtani possibly looming in relief in the potential game seven if needed. That's the way that kind of lines up the best. I would expect him possibly game four be pitching and hitting, and that'll be a fun experience again.
One of the conversations that we're having here in Canada about the Jays is that this is a very likable team. And they've got a lot of character players. And I'm wondering, is there a more likable player than another on the Los Angeles Dodgers? And it's okay if it's Freddie Freeman, even though he's Canadian.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like it's hard to argue if it's Freddie Freeman, especially I'll play the hits, especially because I'm speaking to a Canadian audience. But I'm sure Freddie was kind of saying the other day, or yesterday actually, that he was kind of expecting to get booed this time around. So we'll see what kind of reception he gets in Toronto.
Fabian Ardaia joining us in The Athletic, covering the LA Dodgers. I'm interested if you talked about a potential game seven, Ohtani out of the bullpen. And I'm like, how will that work? Like, to get him warmed up while he's still in the batting lineup, would he just like bat and then run down to the bullpen and throw a couple until he's due up again? Like, how would that work?
I mean, that's essentially what he had to do during the WBC when he did it, only other time he's ever come in relief. Maybe they'll have to come up with something creative where he's throwing in the batting cages or something like that, just to sort of get loose. It's gonna be hard. Like, obviously the logistics of it are incredibly difficult, and I think the other part is that if he can pitch in relief, he probably has to close out the game just the way that the Ohtani rule is written, because if he comes in middle relief and gets removed as a pitcher, then you lose him as a hitter as well. So there's all kinds of different factors that sort of,
I didn't think of that,
play into Ohtani in relief. But it's something that is on the table for potential game seven. And I think there is a scenario out there where it's Shohei Ohtani closing out game seven of the World Series, which I'm sure is Major League Baseball's dream.
As we continue to preview the World Series from a Dodger perspective with Fabian Ardaia, we're going to ask him, are the Dodgers becoming the most hated team in baseball? Next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie Locker with you. Of course, the teases have begun around, well, not only Regina, but Toronto of Vancouver, that the Foo Fighters sound like they could be announcing something tomorrow on these advertisements. It has the Foo Fighters band logo and tomorrow's date. I'll be there if they're in Saskatchewan.
How exciting.
Meanwhile, we continue to preview the World Series with the Athletics. Fabian Ardaia, he covers the team for the Athletic. Locker, take it away.
Fabian, I've got a bit of a, I got to give you some background on me first. So I'm a Jays fan, but my daughter has decided to date, and actually they're engaged now, a Yankees fan. And so we have had some interesting conversations during this World Series run for the Blue Jays. And one of the things that I've talked to Craig, my future son-in-law, about, and he actually played a little bit of pro ball, is like the hatred for the Yankees, right? The evil empire. The Dodgers closing in on the Yankees on potentially becoming the most hated team in baseball.
I think there's some of that. I do. Especially sort of talking about labor sort of landscape and the Dodgers being painted as the reason why there might be a lockout after 26, and sort of viewing them as trying to break the system with their spending. I think that's there's definitely something to that. There's something to the conversation coming into the season, where are the Dodgers ruining baseball with how much they're spending? You even saw Dave Roberts kind of lean into that after they won the pennant, saying, let's win four more games and really ruin baseball. I definitely think there's something to that the Dodgers are kind of leaning into, but I do think that there's something where a lot of the players look to the Dodgers as of like what teams should be doing. Obviously, the Dodgers have some advantages the other teams do not. And I think that's something that's been baked into the sport for years. Like, there's always going to be teams that have more advantages than others. But I think the Dodgers have kind of leveraged them in a way that most teams don't. It's an ability and willingness to kind of keep pouring in their money into the roster, and it's sort of paid off for them. I think there's some opposing fan bases that point to the Dodgers and are rooting against them. And I think the Dodgers in some ways kind of embrace that a little bit.
I wanted to know, like, how I heard Dave Roberts' comment, but how are the players reacting to that narrative of ruining baseball and we're getting paid and everything else? Are they leaning in as hard as Dave Roberts is, or do they just go, don't talk to me about how much money I make?
I think they're leaning into, like, this is what teams should be doing. Like, this is what teams should be spending. Like, teams should be spending. This is why the Dodgers have become a destination. That's why Blake Snell, when he signed, said, I took less money, actually, to be a Dodger because I want to be in a place that they know that the rosters are going to keep being infused with talent and spending. Like, this isn't going to be just, in their eyes, this isn't going to be just a short couple-year window. This is a window that's going to keep staying open because they keep spending, and whatever money they keep making off winning, they're going to keep fueling into the franchise and sort of understanding that. And obviously they have some advantages, like I mentioned before, even before you factor in Shohei Ohtani's contract structure, which allows them a lot of leverage to keep spending. But like they've kept doing it. Like, they won the World Series and then they kept adding money and went out and signed Blake Snell, went out and signed Tanner Scott. And like, that's something that players gravitate towards. I think the Dodgers say, like, this is what teams should be doing.
Fabian, it is an interesting World Series this year because you've got this dynamic which we've just painted for everybody, where you got the Dodgers spending like crazy to build this unbelievable team, and then you've got a team that's not even in the United States of America, and we know how much pride Americans take in their favorite pastime. So how is this, and it's a perception question, how is this World Series being viewed in, you know, south of the border?
I still think there is something to the Dodgers being seen as the villains in this, even if it's an international World Series. I do think that just because of the narrative that's been baked in from the start of the season, from the off season, of the Dodgers being seen as ruining baseball. I think there's something to wanting to see a new team win it. And I think that's something that even south of the border are kind of embracing a little bit. They've kind of rallied behind this Jays team in a way that
really
also seeing how, in some ways, yes,
okay.
I do think so. I think seeing the reaction that crowd in Toronto had to Vlad talking after game six, to some of the tears after game seven, I think there's definitely something to rooting for that in a sense, as opposed to a Dodgers team that just won last year, be winning three times in 6 years, and that they feel is ruining the sport.
Okay, Fabian, what do you think? How does this series play out between the Dodgers and the Blue Jays for the World Series?
Yeah, it's going to be tough, cause especially with Blue Jays having home field advantage. I'm going to say the starting pitching for the Dodgers is hard to really at this point, so I'm going to say Dodgers in six.
There you have it. Dodgers in six, says The Athletic's Fabian Ardaya, who covers the Dodgers.
I think he was being nice. I think he's trying to give us a little bit of hope. I don't think he actually believes that.
If the Blue Jays get it back to Toronto, and I'm sorry to flip it and say, shouldn't it be the Dodgers get it back to Toronto? No. If the Blue Jays get it back to Toronto for game six, it gets interesting.
So you got a sweep or in five, but you're saying if the Jays can get a couple of wins under their belt in that first four.
Split Toronto, win one in L.A., get it back to Toronto.
We got a World Series possibility here.
Let's go. Jamie and Locker with you on a Wednesday edition of The Green Zone. Hope you're having a great Wednesday afternoon. Of course, the regular season finale in the Canadian Football League goes down Saturday night. The last game of the season is the BC Lions against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Kickoff 5 o'clock, The Green Zone pregame show at 3 o'clock. And we'll see. It's Does BC need to win to get second place? Locker, do you want to go through all the playoff implications this week?
Or actually, I will be doing a podcast a little later on this evening and plan on putting it about 45 minutes in, and we're going to break down all of the playoff implications for this weekend.
Past.
Week 21 in the CFL. Stay tuned, everybody.
Yeah, we're actually not doing that. There's too many things that could happen with different wins and all that stuff. But we know this! The Rough Riders are hosting the West Final coming up. But first things first.
If you overheard Jamie trying to explain it, you'd want a drink.
And the Riders take on the BC Lions this weekend. They announced the Player of the Year nominees in Saskatchewan and across the Canadian Football League for each team. The Rough Riders' most outstanding player, a unanimous selection, is quarterback Trevor Harris. And our next guest is the Rough Riders' Rookie of the Year. For the second straight year, it's a rookie left tackle. Peyton Collins is joining us this afternoon. Peyton, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So, Peyton, what's it like to get this honor in your first year in a new city, in a new country, on a new team, to be nominated as the team's Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a special feeling for sure. And, you know, it's really just a testament to, you know, these coaches, this organization, like my teammates, you know, especially all the veterans in the O-line room who have helped me along the way. I mean, it's really a testament to all of them for, you know, just believing in me and just helping me every step of the way.
Peyton, you're new to town. You're also new to a bunch of guys, like a group of guys. You got to fit in. You got to sort of, you know, ease your way into the culture. As that rookie, what was your first impression of this group?
There were a lot of good first impressions. Definitely one that stuck out was first impression of Jamarcus Hardrick or Yoshi. I'm sure you guys have heard. He's a great guy. He's just he's his own person. That's all I can say. But. No, there's a lot of good first impressions for sure, and especially, you know, offensive linemen, they're usually the closest group on the team just because, you know, we're always together, you know, going out to eat, doing all those things, and yeah, but no, everyone was great when I got here.
Has Yoshi tried to pick you up yet? Did you make a big block or something? Has he attempted, because he'll throw a couple of receivers up on his shoulder. We've seen him do that. What about you?
Yeah, not quite pick me up, but he's definitely, you know, giving me some good headbutts and stuff like that, and big old Yoshi hugs that he squeezes so hard. But no, he's done some funny things for sure to me.
What surprised you most about just taking a step outside of the locker room, Peyton? What were your impressions and thoughts on Saskatchewan as a whole when you got here?
Yeah, I love it, to be honest. I played at Eastern Kentucky, which is in Richmond, Kentucky, which is, you know, way smaller than Regina. You know, the tallest building is probably not even as tall as the stadium at Mosaic. So I love being in Regina. You know, I mean, it's like a more of a city feel and stuff like that. And playing at a, you know, a smaller school in college, I like these fans, the stadium. Like, it's, you know, I've never really been in too many atmospheres like that. So for me, it's been like super exciting and just something that I've never got to experience before. So I'm just really grateful. Like, I mean, these fans are incredible. Like, the stadium's always packed. It's super loud. Like, it's so much fun, to be honest.
Peyton Collins, the Rough Riders.
It's a little cold.
Well, that was my next question,
yeah,
Peyton.
Yeah.
I've interviewed Peyton before and I asked him about this. He's from Ohio, so I'm curious on this because Belton Johnson, our game day analyst, was a right tackle. He played at Ole Miss. He played up here in Saskatchewan and Hamilton and Winnipeg. And when he found out and heard Edwin Harrison say, I knew how strong his hands were because Peyton doesn't wear gloves. Peyton, we had a conversation a few weeks ago about, okay, maybe the gloves will come on as it gets cold enough. Has it gotten cold enough that you've put on gloves yet?
The gloves have not come on yet. Yeah. We'll see if the trend keeps going, more cold, then we'll see. But they officially have not come on yet.
So. Okay.
So one of the more involved conversations we've had on the Green Zone, Peyton, is when Stu Johnston, the commissioner, made a couple of adjustments to the rules. So I'm guessing that you guys have been chatting about that, but you're in a different position. You're kind of getting used to the CFL game versus the American game, the Canadian game versus the American game. Was there one change that was harder than another, like one rule that was harder than another to adapt to, or was it pretty seamless?
It definitely wasn't too hard, just being an offensive line, O-line and D-line, the really, only big thing that changes the yard off the ball. But other than that, I would say just the three downs or four downs, that's probably the thing that I've had to adjust to most. But, other than that, I feel like, a lot of the big rule changes are more for other positions. Like receivers, DBs, all that stuff, quarterback. Yeah. So, but for O-line and D-line, I feel like really just feels like football. Yeah.
I was wondering, does the yard off the ball really is that big that big of an adjustment? Because in the U.S. the tackle can usually set a little deeper before snap. So you guys are almost a yard from the defensive line, like the defensive end, anyways. Is it?
They're always not on the line anyway in the NFL.
So was it that big of an adjustment or not?
I think it definitely was, being more patient in situations and understanding that you might need to take another step or two here on this play, just because of that yard off the ball, whereas in college I wouldn't need that extra step or two because I'd already be at the guy. I feel like I adjusted pretty quickly to that. That was really the biggest change for me.
So you're from Columbus, and I'm curious, did you at all follow hockey? Are the Blue Jackets your team?
Oh, I love the Blue Jackets, yeah. Yeah, I'm not like a huge hockey fan, but I love going to Blue Jackets games. I went to a lot growing up in Columbus. Yeah.
So you have gone to Blue That's Jackets awesome. Games?
Yeah.
How many times do you get
Rick Nash?
Do you get startled every time that damn cannon goes off? Like that would freak the what out of me if I didn't know it was coming.
Especially when I was like a younger kid and we would go. That's a very loud cannon that goes off when they score and then they play the song and
How's your hockey skill?
Yeah,
Peyton.
Yeah. Did you ever strap them on? 6'6".
Not too much of a skater. I can play in the driveway, but if you put me on skates, that's where you lose me.
And see, I was just wondering. I was just trying to do some pre-scout for Brett Lawther for the charity hockey tournament that they do for charity every off-season up here in
that's
Saskatchewan.
Right.
I was just doing some pre-scout, but it doesn't sound like Brett Lawther is going to draft you for the charity event coming up. As we're talking to Peyton Collins, the rookie nominee for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Of course, is it always been default, based on your hair color, that you just automatically get nicknamed Clifford or Big Red?
Big Red, yes. Clifford was actually, this is really the first time anyone's really called me Clifford. It's usually just Big Red or Red or, Clifford was a new one, but I like that one.
Who came up with Clifford? Was it Jamarcus?
It might have been Coach Mays. I don't know. Trevor, someone like that. Someone said Clifford, and it's just.
If you could listen, and the rules, Peyton, you're not allowed to pick your own nickname, but if you could, what would it be? Because, redheads get kind of the short end of the stick, right? Like, it's too easy. It's like a default almost. What would your nickname be if you picked
it? Yeah. I've gotten a few over the years, Red Mamba, which I really liked.
That's not bad.
Oh, Red Mamba.
Okay.
All right.
I guess if I had to pick, that would be it. Yeah.
All right.
I'll start that on social, trying to get things
going.
Switched around for Peyton Collins. You were a pretty darn good basketball player in high school. Was there ever a choice, a decision post high school or not on what direction you were going?
Yeah, I love basketball. I still love to this day. I chose to pursue football my senior year of high school. you know, I, that last year of football in high school, I had committed. And so that following basketball season, I was already committed to play football in college. So that kind of shut off, but no, I still love basketball, and yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Is there, are there other hoopers in the team? If you, do you go on one-on-one with anybody and you just to, for fun or no?
Not yet. They, some people say they can hoop, but I don't know. We'll see. They don't think I can hoop, so we might have to set something up. So.
Peyton, I got a question for you, and I want to make sure that I preface this by saying out loud that you are very deserving of this Rookie of the Year nomination, right? But Joe Robustelli, I don't know if you are aware of this, but he was eliminated from the possibility of getting this award because he played one game last year. By the way, we call him Found Money, which that was a nickname we started here. One of our Green Zone listeners started that. So you got to call our Joe Found Money. Now, I'm curious, I don't know what kind of relationship you have with him, but is there a way that you can kind of rub it in that you got this and he didn't?
No, I would never rub that in with Robustelli. But no, I'm sure if I did, I'm sure he would. He would laugh with me. He's that type of guy.
Yeah.
He's not going to take anything like that seriously. Yeah.
He came on the show and we said, someone said Joe Robustelli because of his flag football and he barely played. It's like that, you put on a winter coat and it's like, oh, there's 20 bucks in here. It's like Found Money. And we said that to Joe and he's like, I love that nickname. He was thrilled.
It sticks.
With
we like that
the Found Money. But Peyton.
It's better than Clifford.
Congratulations. On the Rookie of the Year nomination, you've been holding it down on the left side. Best of luck Saturday. Best of luck in the West Final. And hopefully I'm interviewing you in Winnipeg in a couple of weeks at the Grey Cup.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate you guys.
This is fun, Peyton. Thank you.
That is Peyton Collins, left tackle of the Saskatchewan Roughriders, Rookie of the Year nomination. And, yeah, that Columbus cannon.
Yeah.
Some of the video of broadcasters doing like their pregame hit, and we're down here and boom, and they're like, oh!
Can you imagine if Peyton had gone hockey, made his way into the NHL?
That'd be a heck of a power forward, or like the next Zdeno Chara on the blue line. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone. A lot more to come, including one of the greatest lies ever told by a football player. You'll hear it next on 980 CJME and 650 CKM. Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone. Sorry to take you back to the schoolyard, but liar, liar, pants on fire. Aaron Rodgers today talking about his upcoming game against the Green Bay Packers.
I don't have any animosity toward the organization. Obviously, I wish that, you know, things have been better in our last year there, but this is not a revenge game for me. I'm just excited to see some of those guys and be on Sunday Night Football again. Obviously, we would have loved to ride off in the sunset after a Super Bowl, right? But that's not the way the league goes sometimes. You know, I knew the writing was on the wall when Jordan was picked. And as a matter of time, I happened to win MVP the first 2 years he was with us. But I knew at some point there would be a change, and if I wanted to play, it'd probably have to be elsewhere.
I hold no animosity. It's not a revenge game. But let me just slide in the fact that I did win two MVPs after they drafted Jordan Love, yeah, and they still got rid of me. This is a revenge game for Aaron Rodgers.
100%. My goodness. You know, this is part of the reason why I think his credibility is, like, you know, if you just, this is a good lesson for the kids listening today. Just be honest. Even when you think it might not be the best thing to do, honesty is always going to be the best approach. It always will be. It might be painful, but long term, it's going to be better. Trust me on this, kids.
I think you could actually see Aaron Rodgers' nose start getting longer as he kept on talking about how this game is no big deal.
The tone he took.
The Green Bay Packers. But remember, everything. I did win two MVPs after they drafted Jordan Love in the first round.